Hey, it's Scott, and guess what? You're about to hear an ad. And that's both good and bad. It's good because ads are what make it possible for me to keep bringing you these episodes. And it's bad because, well, maybe you don't like listening to ads, and I get that. And the good news is, you don't have to. When you sign up to support the show, you get every single episode without any ads. Plus, you get all the bonus episodes. Yeah, did you know there are actually bonus episodes? And you can try it all for free just to see what it's like. If you're on an iPhone, just go to the What Was That Like podcast and at the top, click on Try Free and you're in. On Android, just go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus and try it out completely free. Once you've had the ad-free experience, you'll see why hundreds of other listeners are already doing it. But for now, here's another ad and then on with today's episode.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'll confess, sometimes I let my podcast playlist get out of hand and I get way behind. But there's one show that I subscribe to and any new episode goes right to the top of the queue. That's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's because I never have to figure out, okay, is this one going to be interesting or do I wait for the next one like I do for some shows? Because Jordan's conversations are always a must-listen for me. He talks to fascinating people from any category you can think of. Authors, scientists, athletes, you name it. He's talked to undercover cops who posed as mafia and the actual career mafia hitmen. And the stories he gets out of these people, just incredible. In one episode, he talked to Paul Holes. You might know that name if you're into true crime. He's the former investigator who uses really advanced methods to solve cold cases, including the Golden State Killer. And another one I really enjoyed was with Sam Harris, an author and neuroscientist who promotes skepticism, and he doesn't mind taking on some seriously controversial topics like politics or religion. That one's going to make you think. Whenever a new episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show pops up, I already know it's going to be an episode that I'll enjoy listening to, and I'll bet you will too. For some episode recommendations, check out jordanharbinger.com/start. Or search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
What Was That Like? Contains adult language and content and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
And that's when I realized I had something I did not ever want to experience attached to the end of my leg.
Welcome to What Was That Like? I'm your host, Scott Johnson. This is the show where we talk to regular people, people just like you or just like me, who have found themselves in an extremely unusual situation. We'll hear their stories and get inside their head because we all want to know, what was that like? More information about each episode at whatwasthatlike.com. Here we go. Henry is an educator in the field of marine science. And as you'll hear when we're talking, it's not just his job, it's his life work. It's as much a passion for him as it is a career. When he goes diving in a river and kind of rummaging around the bottom, he never really knows what he'll find. What he expects to find mostly are rocks and sand. What he hopes to find are ancient shark teeth or even the skeletal remains of prehistoric creatures. What he did not expect to find was a live alligator. But one day he did, and he was lucky enough to live through it and be able to tell us the story today. And I want to say a big thank you to the patrons of this show. If you'd like to join them and support the show, you can do that at whatwasthatlike.com/support. And if you hang around after today's episode, I'll tell you about the podcast that I support through Patreon. But first, We're going to hear about what happened to Henry. How many years have you been diving?
Oh, let's see. Must be about 13 years, I think. Somewhere around there.
So you're pretty experienced then.
Yeah. I've got a little bit of experience, yeah.
Can you tell me, what is a typical dive like? I mean, are you going from a boat, or how is it set up?
Well, it really depends on what kind of diving there is. That's kind of the great thing about this hobby. You know, there's so many different kinds. You can really, really do all sorts of different things. I've got friends of mine who are cave divers. I have friends of mine who go spearfishing, and I've done some of these things as well. I was in the Keys last weekend I'm a scuba instructor. I was in the Keys this past weekend diving on reefs and teaching my students how to dive and having a great time. But fossil diving is a different ball game.
How is it different?
Well, for starters, where we dive is some place that most people wouldn't even get into the water. It's a black water river, we like to call it, because the water is black. You can't really see too much. And being as it's Florida, there's quite a few creatures that inhabit that river as well. And we actually,
as we're about to find out, I'm sure, right?
yes, exactly. We do use a boat sometimes. Most of the time we use something called a mud boat, basically a little fiberglass or metal hull with a long extended motor off the back. And that's so we can go in shallow and deeper waters, because the river, it's, you know, it's not maintained or anything by any boating authority. So there's stumps and trees and all sorts of things floating around in there. So we were on a boat.
So this is like, you called it a black water river. Mm-hmm. And so you have to dive. Obviously, you need to bring light with you to see what you're trying to find, right?
Exactly.
What is it you're looking for down there?
We're looking for fossils. You know, one of the amazing things about Florida is the sheer amount of history, geological and biological, that we have. Florida's been above water and underwater several times over the last several thousand and millions of years. And so we have a huge collection of natural history that can be found just underneath our feet. It's pretty cool. And the reason we're in rivers specifically is because they cut through those layers of sediment all the way down and tumbling together and exposing these fossils. So that's what we're really looking for. And it could be things from 20 million year old megalodon shark teeth. So I don't know if you've ever seen that recent movie with I think Jason Statham in it. Not accurate, but it did have a megalodon in it, and that was a giant 60-foot shark. So we're looking for teeth from those guys. We're looking for mako teeth, another kind of shark, all sorts of different kinds of sharks. But there's also vertebra fossils and things like that. You know, most people don't really know how much history is found in Florida, but we actually had Columbian mammoths, which are actually bigger than woolly mammoths, running around on Florida about 20,000 years ago.
So you could theoretically find a mammoth skeleton in the river?
And I have, yep.
Now, you're a teacher of marine sciences. Is this stuff that you use in your classroom, the stuff that you find?
It is, yep. They are fantastic learning tools. I actually take my kids to an area where they can collect their own fossils and go sifting for shark teeth. Obviously a safe area, but... You know, they get to explore and put their hands on the world around them and the natural world that they're so lucky to live near.
That's more exciting than any field trip I went on when I was a kid, I think. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah. you're when you're in the river, you're not snorkeling. You're actually in full scuba gear.
We are in full scuba gear. I have a helmet, lights, tanks, you know, the works. A lot of stuff going on. A lot of equipment. It's very equipment intensive.
Now, what we're going to talk about happened on Saturday, March the 23rd, 2019, just earlier this year, and you were on the Peace River, and that's here in Florida, but that's a long river. Roughly where were you, or what was the nearest town?
It's a little town called Arcadia. Some people are familiar with that. Yeah, it's kind of, if you're in the Tampa area, it would be about 2 hours south and a little bit east, more towards the middle of the state.
And to give people a picture of the size of this river, how deep is it? How far across is it?
again, that really depends on location. Where the Peace River dumps out into the Gulf, it's quite wide. But in some of these narrow areas and bends where I'm hunting for shark teeth and you know other fossils, it may only be 10 feet across, 20 feet across. And again, the depth hugely varied. There's a few spots that we go to that are literally at the time of year that we go to may only be 3 or 4 inches of water. And then it goes down to 10, 20, 30 feet. So it's quite a range. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big range.
And then this river actually changes based on rainfall quite radically. You know, it'll go up and down a good, depending on the season, 5, 10, 20 feet, especially when there's hurricanes running around. Yeah.
Yeah. That's drastic. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there's actually, we call it fossil season, fossil growing season, and fossil hunting season. So, when there's lots of rain in August and over the summer, we call that fossil growing season because the water raises quite a bit. It's not really possible to dive. I did try one time and it's not really possible. The water's just too fast and too deep, but it's great because it starts to erode more of the bottom and more of the banks and expose more formations. And so that's fossil growing season. And then we call it a mini season in about this time of year, actually. There's about, again, depending on how dry it is, there's a few weeks where you can go out again, and then it's not so great until February, March. So, it's a little bit more complicated.
And when you say this time of year, just so people know, we're recording this in like mid-October. So that's like the mini season you're talking about.
Exactly. Last year, I was able to dive the river. I actually dove it again 2 weeks ago. And that's actually the earliest I've really been able to dive in a while, just because it's been so dry. So normally mini season wouldn't start until about late October, beginning November.
So the section of river where you were at that day, had you dived there before?
Many times, actually. Well, that exact section, no. I've done that several mile stretch, different spots along it. But we were actually trying to look for a new area because of the people that I was with. So I was doing some exploration. And so I hadn't dove that exact spot where the incident happened.
And who was with you that day?
I had a good friend of mine, Justin. We've been diving together for a while now, diving for fossils and hunting for arrowheads and things like that. So I had Justin and then this YouTuber named Jake or D Almighty. So this was my second time meeting Jake. And he came down to dive with us and kind of see what we were all about. He found us through Instagram.
So he must be local here in Florida as well then.
No, he's actually not. He's really based kind of in Georgia, but he does come down to Florida a lot to do adventures and things like that. He's his thing is looking in rivers he calls it river treasure. He's found iPhones and rings and gold and a few firearms actually as well.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah, it is.
You never know what you're going to find down there.
Exactly. And I have found some weird things down there, man-made things. Yep.
Do you usually see alligators in this river?
Again, time of year dependent, but yes, we see gators on the sides of the banks all the time. And it's one of the dangers that are kind of ever present. Those and water moccasins, we see water moccasins pretty commonly as well. Most of the time, the gators aren't too big. They're maybe 3 or 4 footers sitting on the sides, and they usually disappear when they see our boat coming by. Of course, I have seen a few here and there, 10, 11 footers, and we usually give them a wide berth. But it is something that we've always been nervous about. I've been diving this river for, I think this will be my 5th year in this river, and I was, I've been very nervous about gators for the longest time in the beginning. And, I think that I probably got a little bit complacent.
Yeah, because if you had any problem with them in 5 years, you right. kind of think, I'm probably fine.
And I've known a friend of mine who actually kind of started me into this hobby. He's been diving it for about 25 years and never had any incident.
He started you in this hobby. Does he feel guilty now?
Well... We joke around about it a lot. Yeah, you kind of have to.
Just take us through what happened that day and how it all played out.
Jake had been diving the day before with another friend of mine, and they hadn't found too much. Jake was down here to make a YouTube video and to try and get into fossil diving. He's never found a megalodon. He had at that time never found a megalodon tooth, a giant shark tooth before. And he knew that Justin and my friend Rick and I had been finding quite a few of these and posting them on social media. So he contacted us and basically was trying to see how it all worked and try it out for himself. So he went on a Friday with some friends, and they found a few things, but nothing spectacular. So I guess they called out the big guns. They called me and Justin out because we like to call ourselves usually pretty lucky. So we planned this trip together, just the three of us on my friend's boat, little mud boat, as I was talking about. And the funny thing is, we were gearing up the boat, and as I said earlier, it's equipment intensive. We have to bring a lot of stuff. We got two tanks each of two air tanks for each of us. And they're usually, we like to dive with steel tanks because we can put a little bit more air inside them. So, you know, that's, you're talking six tanks. Each tank is probably 30 or 40 pounds, you know, pretty heavy, let alone all the buckets and BCDs, which are the jackets that we wear, and regulators and coolers and all this stuff we cram in this boat. And it's not a huge boat. So, you know, we're doing a lot of work, putting wetsuits on and hoods because it can be a little chilly. And it was actually, what was it? It was March. So I was wearing two wetsuits because I get cold pretty easily. So I was double layering myself, which actually turned out to be pretty good idea. So I was putting on my wetsuit and Jake was putting on his. And his, he classically goes out with a camo wetsuit and kind of a military style vest, I would say, for sticking odds and ends in, you know, tools, screwdrivers, things to find and pry under the water. But his wetsuit's actually camo. And so he was joking about how alligators wouldn't be able to see him and they would go straight for me because I was wearing an all black wetsuit with an all black hood and an all black helmet and all black fin. Actually, no, my fins were green, but everything else was all black. And he was saying, I remember him saying something about me being a seal and a tasty snack. And that was actually how we started the day off. So, ended up being a little bit fortuitous there.
Yeah. If this was a novel, that would be a foreshadowing, I think.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So, you know, we were joking around and, that didn't actually stop there. So, you know, we may have been asking for this to happen because in the water, again, I said, this is my second time meeting Jake. And we were kind of messing with each other and grabbing each other's legs and pulling on them whenever we saw each other under the water. And again, remember, it's a black water river, so you can't see anything. It's pitch black other than the small bubble of light that you have with your flashlights. So any bump or pull or squeeze kind of freaks you out a little bit.
I made a decision a long time ago. When I'm out riding my bike each morning and I cross paths with someone, I always smile at that person. And most people smile back. But I do it because even though it's a little thing, it makes a big difference for me and maybe for them. It's just a fact. Small actions can bring big benefits. In the same way, it's also true that taking care of your gut can support the health of the rest of your body. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits not just your gut, but your skin and heart health too. Seed DSO1 is part of my morning routine. If you can call it a routine, it's just two little capsules. And I feel amazing. It helps maintain the health of my heart, and it promotes regularity, which I can attest to. Sorry, that may be a little TMI there. For me, it's great that it's vegan, but it's also sugar-free, soy-free, peanut-free, gluten-free, and has no preservatives. It doesn't even need refrigeration. DSO1 has so many benefits, including the fact that it's backed by a lot of science, but I've barely scratched the surface here. What I can say, though, is that my body feels great, and I've got a promo code so you can see the benefits for yourself.
Trust your gut with Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/what and use code 25WHAT to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/what, code 25WHAT.
Here's my hot take for today. If you see something advertised as a free trial, it might cost you more than you expect. At least that's my experience. I give up my credit card to try something for free for a week, then I forget about it, and now I'm paying for it every month without even noticing it. But when I signed up for Rocket Money, that ridiculous waste came to a screeching halt. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. It lets you see all of your subscriptions listed right there in one place. When you see a subscription you're paying for but you don't want, do you really want to spend an hour on the phone trying to track down some customer service agent to cancel it? Rocket Money can help you get rid of it with just a few taps. They also give me this great dashboard so I can see what I've spent this month compared to last month. And they'll even try to negotiate lower bills for me by up to 20%. So I'm spending less and saving more. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/whatwas. That's rocketmoney.com/whatwas. rocketmoney.com/whatwas.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But we had been messing around doing that day as well. So we're kind of funny there. I'd say we probably went a good 2 or 3 hours of bottom time, of time under the water, without really finding too much. Jake had found a small megalodon tooth. I'd found a small couple odds and ends of random fossil and bone and things like that. And you know, as you start to get into the hobby, you start recognizing a lot of different things. But I would assume most of your listeners don't know what a tapir is or any of that stuff. But we found a few small odds and ends, but nothing crazy. You know, not the big YouTube video making item that we really wanted. You know, Jake's seen pictures of my friend and I coming up with Colombian mammoth legs and tusks and jaws and really cool crazy stuff. So that's what he was hoping. He doesn't really know about the hours and days of work leading up to those, but you know, he wanted something big, right?
Right. So he's thinking finding great stuff, but he's also thinking hopefully a viral video.
Exactly. So and I wanted to live up to my end. You know, I wanted to show him something awesome. I wanted to be part of that process. So I made a suggestion. Turns out not to be one I'll be making again. And that would be the method of discovery for trying to find different spots. So we took him to a few spots that we'd known, and those just didn't pan out. And sometimes that happens. You know, I've gone to a spot where I pulled out a ton of really cool stuff 1 year, and then the next year it's been covered in sand. You know, the river bottom changes every year, so it's kind of tough. So we took him to some well-known spots that we hadn't touched in a while, and none of those really panned out. So I suggested drifting backwards with the current, and one person kind of staying with the boat to move it every time and kind of do a leapfrog action, if you can kind of imagine that. I would get in the water and drift backwards, and they would be with the boat, and I'd pop up and they'd bring the boat to me, and then the next person would drift backwards. We actually had two people drifting and one person kind of with the boat, and basically we're just trying to scan the bottom for gravel beds, areas where there's a lot of fossil material that's pretty obvious. So we're looking for anywhere where there's gravel that's, I would say, is bigger than a quarter. And that's a good sign of maybe other things in that area. Because a lot of the river is just silt and sand. And you're trying to avoid that because you're never going to find anything there. So, you know, I said, all right, let's leapfrog down this river and just scan the bottom. And whenever we hit some gravel, we can anchor up the boat and take a further exploration and further look at that area. And so that was working for a little bit. I was drifting backwards and I found a spot and we'd explore the area. We found a few more cool things, but again, nothing crazy. And I'd say it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was drifting backwards, trying to find a new spot. And at first, I sincerely thought that it was Jake messing with me again. I didn't realize at that time that I was the furthest one down the line. There was no one behind me, but I felt a really, really strong squeeze on my leg and on my foot. And for a split second, I was like, oh man, that's Jake again. And then it got stronger and stronger and stronger. And that's when I realized I had something I did not ever want to experience attached to the end of my leg. It happened really fast at the time, but it's strange. Time seems to have, it speeds up and slows down in my memory. So those first few seconds are really slow. Just a crushing, squeezing feeling. Me thinking, oh, is that my friend? No, this is way too strong. And then it speeds up. And I remember grabbing my BC and inflating. My BC is the jacket that allows divers to go up and stay at the top with a lot of air, or deflate and go down. So I remember grabbing my controller for that and inflating and spin, and it's black. You know, we were probably maybe in 7 feet of water at that time.
7 feet of water. Okay.
Yeah, I'd say something like that. And I remember grabbing my jacket, my BC, and pressing that controller and inflating and just kind of flailing around in the darkness. And I started getting spun around, and the river is it was more of a constriction in the river. It really wasn't that wide at that point. So I was spinning and tumbling and inflating my jacket, and I just feel this twisting motion on my leg. And I just knew I had to go with it, go with the flow. Don't resist it. And at the same time, with my right leg, I'm just kicking, trying to pull my left leg out from whatever it was. Ended up being that alligator. We got to the top, and that's when time slows down for a second again, at least in my memory. I look at the end of my leg, and attached to it is this huge alligator head on my leg. And I kick, and I'm kicking, and I'm kicking. And if you've ever seen an alligator feed, maybe if you've been to one of the alligator shows, or if you've been to the Everglades or anything like that, whenever they're thrown food, or whenever they're attaching themselves and trying to bite onto food, sometimes they do something called a readjustment bite, and they'll shake their head back and forth and open their jaws and clamp down, trying to get a better grip. And so I'm fighting, I'm kicking and pushing with my free leg. And that alligator does that adjustment bite. It opens his mouth just a little bit, not a ton, just a little bit, that I'm able to pull my foot a little bit further out. And it clamps down again. Luckily for me, it was on my fin. I was able to rip my foot out of the fin. And I honestly don't remember getting out of the water. I was just all of a sudden free of that alligator, and then I was on shore. I don't remember anything in between there. I must have walked on water.
What would have been the gator's plan of attack? Well, how do they kill you?
Well, they do something called a death roll. Usually it's an apex predator. The crocodiles and alligators have been around for millions and millions of years. They were around when the dinosaurs were here. So they've got a system, and it works. And usually they go for prey that they can overpower, and then they twist pieces off. And they do something called a death roll, and they latch onto a limb or onto a piece of whatever their hopeful meal is, and they start spinning, and they rip it off. They don't have sharp teeth like sharks. They don't slice and cut. They crunch and rip and pull. And I knew that I could not allow that to happen. I had to make myself too much trouble to be worth it. And that's what I did. I was kicking and pushing and pulling and fighting every second.
What was it, a factor that you had scuba gear on and you could breathe more easily? Like if somebody was just out swimming, you know, they would have a limited time under the water before they start to drown.
I think part of what saved me is my training. Even though it's not meant for something like this necessarily, as a scuba instructor, I'm always telling people, the number one killer of divers is panic. It's not running out of air. It's not getting trapped in a shipwreck or underneath a log. It's doing those things and then panicking. So yes, I was fighting. I was scared, but the fear didn't really catch up to me until I was on shore. But I knew that I had to fight. I knew I couldn't let go of that regulator. I knew that that air was my life. You know, if it had twisted off my foot or stuffed me underneath a log somewhere, if I had my regulator, I could still breathe. And that was the most important thing. And that's what I teach my students. Hold on to your regulator. If something happens, if you get pulled into a current, if you get caught up in a line, you need to keep your air source with you at all times. And that's what I did. So that, you know, that part of my gear and part of my training definitely had an impact on how I was able to survive this ordeal. But I think also, remember when I said I was wearing two wetsuits because I get cold? I'm kind of a big baby with that.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was wearing about 8 millimeters of neoprene on me at that time. I was wearing two wetsuits. One was a 5 millimeter and one was a 3. So he wasn't able to, it's almost like having blubber on my leg. It wasn't able to penetrate as deeply into my leg and get that great of a purchase. And I honestly don't think he was really trying to hunt me out, you know, hunt me down. He probably didn't know I was even in the water until I shoved my foot into his mouth. As I said, it was in more of a narrow restriction of the river, only about 7 feet deep.
So you may have just drifted right
I may
into
have
it.
Just drifted. And that's what I'm thinking, you know, every part of me was black. I was wearing a black wetsuit, black helmet, black hood. Everything was black. Even my gloves were black, except for my fins. My fins were like this bright neon yellow. And so maybe as he saw that fin drive past him, you know, fly past him with the current, maybe he thought that was a fish or something that he could take down because he didn't see the rest of me because I was all kind of camouflaged there. That's what I'm thinking. And so it jumped onto it and then may have done that readjustment when it realized that I was a bit more than what it was hoping for.
How would it have been different if he had grabbed your arm instead of your leg?
Oh, man. Oh, I don't even want to imagine.
Could still kick with both legs, but.
Yeah, I could kick, but what would I be kicking? You know, if he grabbed my arm, I'd be kicking his legs or his tail maybe. That wouldn't have done anything. The fact that he grabbed my leg meant I knew exactly where to kick to try and get its face.
And even better, the lower part of your leg.
Exactly. It was the bite was actually right across my heel. So you can actually see tooth marks on my foot and on my upper, I guess my calf area. So it was right across that heel joint. So right where the fin meets the foot or meets the leg, basically.
So you got away from him and start. And you, at that point, your main goal is just to get out of the water. Did he pursue you at all?
Nope. I remember seeing his face on my foot, and I remember kicking and kicking, and then that whole readjustment bite, and then pulling free. And after I pulled free again, I blank out for a second there. I just teleport from I'm out of the mouth. I'm on the shore, and then I don't see him at all until maybe 2 minutes later when I'm still waiting for my friends. They haven't realized this yet. 2 minutes later, I see his head pop up on the other side of the river. And then that was the last time I saw him because a few minutes after that, my friend Jake finally realized what was happening. And he came over and the alligator disappeared. But it was actually, it took several minutes for anyone to notice. You know, so if I was bleeding out, if God forbid my foot had been taken off, I was bleeding out. It would have taken quite some time for someone to realize because it wasn't, it took maybe five minutes for Jake to pop his head up the first time. And I was kind of shocked at the time, obviously. So I kind of calmly said to him, "Hey, I've been bitten by an alligator." And he was pretty far away from me, so he didn't really understand what I was saying. He just saw me sitting on the bank. He actually went back down. He went back down and started diving for another 5 minutes. And then he popped back up and saw that I was in the exact same spot on the bank. And I said it a little bit louder the second time. And if you watch his video, at that point, he realizes, oh, I need to get over there now.
Right.
And my friend Justin is also underwater somewhere further upriver.
Yeah, Henry, you've been attacked by an alligator. We'll be with you in a few minutes.
We got some stuff we're looking for. Exactly.
Man. So what were your injuries? I mean, how bad was the bite?
I got so lucky. You know, I probably got the best case scenario. You know, I got a great story out of it, but I didn't really lose too much. I didn't really get too much damage on my leg. I have tooth marks going across, across my foot, two on each side of my foot. One a little deeper where it actually tore further through both my fin and my booties. And then two smaller holes, very, very small scars on my calf area. And I think that's because I was wearing so much wetsuit up there. On my foot, I was only wearing a very thin boot. So it was able, and I still use those boots. And I get to tell the story to my students, and I get to show them the holes in my boots. And it's pretty funny.
Hey, this is Scott. Did you know we offer a premium feed of this show that is completely ad-free and there are bonus episodes? Go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus or just click the link in the show notes of any episode to learn more and to sign up. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can sign up right there in the app by clicking try free at the top of the episode list. And I hope to see you in the premium feed soon.
But so I have some nerve damage in my foot. I can't really feel it's my left foot, and I can't feel too much on the right side of my left foot, all around that scar, just from the crushing damage. As I said, they don't tear and cut like sharks do, for example. They crush. And so when I went to the hospital, their biggest thing was trying to figure out if I had broken any bones. But I didn't get to the hospital for hours actually.
Because you were not really near a hospital.
I was several miles upriver from the nearest boat ramp. And so we had to, Jake had to get me, and then Jake had to go get my friend Justin, pull Justin up, and Justin and Jake pulled the boat over to me, and we had to load up all our gear and then drive me all the way to the boat ramp.
Yeah, you obviously can't leave everything out
there. Right, exactly. You know. Yeah. And I wasn't bleeding. It was cold, so my foot was kind of blue already, you know, because it was the water is pretty cold, and so I didn't bleed out too much for a while. I just remember I was sitting at the bow of the boat, and Justin and Jake were driving me back, and we pass a group of maybe 15 sifters, and those are people who go out with they're almost like grates, you know, with chicken wire and wooden frames, and they're digging with shovels in the river and trying to look for teeth and other things as well. And so we passed this group of sifters, me sitting on the bow holding my foot, blood kind of welling up between my fingers. And we were kind of shouting at them what happened. And I remember one woman says, "Oh, hell no, I'm out of here." And she immediately climbs out of the river onto the bank and pulls her son with her. She had a younger son with her. And so I got a decent laugh out of that.
Well, I mean, if I'm a parent too, if I were out there with my kid and there's some, what you picturing in your mind is a rogue gator going around attacking people, you know, yeah, I'd get out of there too.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously a gator would never have anything to do with a group of 15 people walking and standing around making a lot of noise, but you know, so it took probably an hour for us to get back from the dive spot. And then we still had to load our cars and I drove separately, you know, we all drove separately, all three of us. So I wasn't about to just leave my car. You know, I had no way to get out of there without driving myself. And luckily it was my left foot, so I was able to use my right foot, and I drove the 2 hours back to St. Pete. And that's kind of when I decided, well, you know, I should probably get this looked at, because alligators have notoriously dirty mouths. You know,
that's what I was wondering too. And just the fact that it was in the dark, you know, a black river, is it, what was the concern for bacteria or infection?
Big concern. I went to a hospital in St. Petersburg. And again, this is actually pretty humorous after the fact. But I walk in with no shoes because I don't even know where they ended up. I had flip-flops at some point, but I lost those. So I walk in with no shoes, still in my bathing suit, soaking wet, dirt and black water river smeared all over my face. And I walk in there telling the front desk that I got bit by an alligator. And this was a hospital that is nowhere near anywhere you would probably get bitten by an alligator.
They don't get too many of those, huh?
No. They actually said, I remember when I finally got into a room, and it didn't take long, the nurse came up to me and she was like, "You got bit by what? An alligator?" And then as I was waiting for the doctor, I just hear across the hallway from behind a curtain, "We have a gator bite." Yeah, a real gator bite. So I hear all the staff of the hospital talking to each other. Apparently I was their one and only ever gator bite, and they've been in operation for quite a few years. So it really doesn't happen that much. There's only been maybe 400 in the last 50 years, something like that. It doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. I was surprised at the numbers on that, that it's, you know, you think about it, that you think, wow, it must happen all the time, especially here in Florida, because we see them, you know, people see them on the golf course or whatever. And, I mean, I've had friends who have a lake, you know, behind their house, and they've several times they've had to come and have trappers come and take gators away because they're just crawling around. And, you know, there's people, they're in a regular neighborhood. So, but it doesn't, in spite of all that, gator attacks really aren't that common.
No, I was also very surprised when I looked up the numbers on this. I did the same exact thing. You know, I went on Google and typed in alligators and found all the reports and found that it doesn't really happen that much, at least unmolested, you know, without being someone who's messing around and trying to grab the gators.
Right. Trying to provoke something.
Yeah. Exactly.
So did you have any infection or any problems?
No. So, so when I got to hospital, they immediately flushed out the wound and cleaned it out. And because luckily, I guess kind of luckily for me, because of the nerve damage, I actually, on my biggest wound, I didn't really feel them probing around in there, because they were flushing it out and sticking tubes and other things inside the wound, cleaning it out. And they put me on a round of antibiotics for about 2 weeks. But they couldn't stitch it up, unfortunately. With bites like that, they're really nervous about stitching in bacteria and closing up the wound and then having an infection set in, because it can't naturally flush itself out. So I've actually got a pretty, it's kind of keloided, it's kind of raised and bumpy because they couldn't stitch it up.
That's kind of cool, though. You can show people your scar and say, how this happened, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
It was kind of fortunate that when this happened, that you had Jake there, who he's a pretty major. How many subscribers does he have on his YouTube channel?
I think he actually just broke 8 million the other week.
That is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So he was there, and he, although he didn't get the actual, he must be regretting not getting the actual attack.
You know, I had a GoPro on. I just didn't turn it on at that time.
Oh,
so I could have had it all from point of view, you know. I'd rather never do that again.
Subscribe
that footage, but
yeah, no, you don't want to do that. But yeah, if that would have been on, you could have had 8 million subscribers on your own. That kind of video. He did film as you were calling out. You were calling from the bank of the river there, saying, "Hey," and he's, you know, he's on his way. I'm going to have a link to that, or actually, I'll probably just put that video on the website in the show notes for this episode, so people can watch that.
Yeah, Jake would love that, of course. I think the video's got at least a million views already.
What happened? There was something with the flipper. Did you lose a flipper, or what happened?
Oh, yes, I forgot to mention that. So, yes, the alligator took my fin, disappeared off with it, and you know, of course, I thought I'd never see that again. I've lost things in that river before, tools, or I've actually lost a whole set of fins before when I left it on the side of the bank and an airboat came by and flushed the fins right into the water, and they got taken by the current and disappeared. So, I never expected to see that fin again, but I got contacted on my Instagram account. I have an account on Instagram for posting all these things. It's think seek. So, thinking about what I want to seek for, you know, think about what I want to hunt for. Anyway, so I had someone private message me on that profile with a picture of a fin saying, "Hey, I saw Jake's video. I saw D Almighty's video. Is this your fin?" He had actually gone out snorkeling looking for shark teeth the next day. And the video didn't come out until about a week later, but he had gone snorkeling the next day, found that fin, picked it up, and then thrown it in his truck and forgot about it until he saw the video and recognized me and the story and the fin, because I think in the video I lift my fin up and talk about it or something like that. And so, yeah, so he messaged me saying, "Hey, is this your fin?" And it's a picture of my exact fin, and it's even got holes in the side of it from where the teeth marks entered it. And you know, I was talking with him, and we were going to meet up, but we kind of never really got around to it. Summer was happening, so as a teacher, you know, I had my summer break, and I was doing a lot of I was teaching classes and doing some other things, and we never really got around to it. About 2 weeks ago, I was out on a friend's property digging for arrowheads. That's another thing that I do aside from looking for fossils. I look for Native American artifacts on private property. And so I was out there on my friend's property looking for arrowheads, and he invited another one of his mutual friends and their friends. So, you know, this is a few friends removed at this point. Turns out that friend's friend's friend was the guy who found my fin. And so we were 20 feet apart. We didn't even realize for a while. We were 20 feet apart, digging our own holes, looking for artifacts. And we just start chatting about what other things we do and blah, 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 blah. And somehow we get on the topic of looking for fossils. And naturally, I pull out my alligator story because it's a great story. And he was like, "Wait a minute, are you so-and-so?" And he's like, I have your fin in my truck. And so
that's incredible.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a small world.
So the fossil geek community is pretty small.
Yeah, pretty small. Exactly.
What could you have done anything to avoid this?
Yeah, so it's
I mean, other than not going in the river, you know?
Right. I went diving. I knew that it had freaked me out. This is a few months removed from the incident now, so I'm pretty calm and I can kind of laugh about it and talk about it. But I'm going to be honest, that first week or two, I was pretty freaked out. But I knew that this was something that I still wanted to keep doing, and I didn't want to get so psyched out and let so much time go by that I would never get back in the water again. So I knew that I had to kind of get back on the horse. And I think maybe it was 3 weeks later after that incident, my friend said, "Hey, you know, I know all this happened, but are you interested in diving again?" And I said, "Yes, let's go. Let's do it right now. I need to get back in the water." And so I was back in there and moving a little bit more cautiously. I still do. I was in the water again 2 weeks ago from now. But I just knew I had to get back in there.
You were just drifting, and you think you probably just kind of drifted into him.
Yeah,
but there's no way to see. He couldn't have seen you coming, and you couldn't see him. So it's just something that might happen, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's something that it's a risk. You know, I can minimize the risk by not covering as much area in such a way. You know, I was in the water drifting backwards, and we would go quarter mile to half mile stretches at a time as we were leapfrogging. That's covering a huge amount of distance. You will 100% see an alligator somewhere in that region, hopefully on the side, but maybe behind you. Historically, we would bang on the boat and throw rocks in the water and try and make a lot of noise, and then we would move up current, give whatever was near us plenty of time to get out of the way. And that's what I've done since. And I don't think I'll ever do the drifting backwards thing again, you know, but it is inherently a risk. Yeah. And I'm stupid enough, I guess, to take it. I love collecting. I love the history, and I found some amazing things. I've actually, a friend of mine, his name is Rick. We donated a Colombian mammoth find to the Florida Museum of Natural History last year, and they're using it to write a paper. And I had it in my classroom for a little while. Not the whole thing, obviously, but I had a leg bone and some vertebrae and one of his tusks and all these things. So, you know, it's something that I personally love as a hobby, and I think I can also kind of contribute a little bit to others' education on Florida's natural history.
It's something you're passionate about. You obviously want to keep doing it, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, something just occurred to me, though. When you're out in the river and you find these things, obviously, that have historical mm-hmm. or geographical value, mm-hmm. whose property is that?
That's a great question. Great question. With shark teeth, due to the sheer number of shark teeth that are found in Florida and other places, at least in Florida law, you don't have to have any special license or anything like that to have shark teeth and collect those. Anything else, though, vertebrate fossils, so things like the mammoth, or I find sloth, ancient giant sloth teeth and claws and things like that. Anything vertebrate, you need to have a fossil license, and you can get that through the University of Florida and the Gainesville Museum. And it's not expensive. It's about $5 a year for that license. And every time I find something that's vertebrate, so anything that I find that is not shark or fish, we document and then we inform. And you're supposed to, not everybody does, but you should, and we do. We document and inform the university, and if they want one of our finds as part of having that license, they can take that and utilize it for scientific purposes. And they didn't ask for the mammoth, but they kind of hinted that they would appreciate it. And my friend and I, but they, you know, they could have taken it, but they, I know Dr. Hulbert, that's the guy who runs the entire state program. I've met up with him a few times now. So they requested the mammoth and my friend and I, we donated it to them. So,
well, yeah, being good stewards of exactly. this kind of item, they, you know, it's pretty obvious that that's what you'd want to do, I'm sure.
Exactly. But a lot of these things, it's kind of tough because, of course, there is some knowledge to be gained from the fossils and from what is found. Unfortunately, with river finds, often location is kind of not as useful because the river tumbles and pushes things together. You know, we have 10 million year old shark teeth next to 10,000 year old mammoth stuff, you know, so that isn't as necessary to record like exact location, and general areas are good, but you know, you can't get too specific with that.
Right. You won't see any trends or anything if it was tracked, no. Probably.
But there are microfossils and things. So when I gave the leg bone to Dr. Hulbert, he was able to examine that and look for things like ancient pollen spores that are embedded within all the way up inside the bone. So there are things that you can do to help date and put in relation to other things.
So people like that must be pretty happy that stupid people are going out in the river with the alligators to yep. to find these things and bring them back, and they just exactly. say, okay, that's great, yep. I'll take it.
We've joked about that before. He said, yep, you guys go ahead, I will not be in that river, but let me know what you find.
It is a great story, man. It's just crazy. So we'll have on the show notes for this episode, we'll have Jake's video, and I'll put your Instagram link on there, so if people want to follow you and see what you're up to. Again, once again, the Instagram handle is thinkseek, thinkseek, all one word on Instagram. And we'll look forward to seeing what great things you find in the future. Hopefully no more alligators.
Hopefully.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that. You know, treasure hunting and fossil hunting does sound fun, but personally, I think I prefer hobbies that don't involve potential alligator attacks. Now, before we wrap up this episode, I want to tell you about a podcast that I listen to and support. It's called Darknet Diaries, and it's hosted by a guy named Jack Reesider. The tagline for this show is True Stories from the Dark Side of the Internet. Now, for me, it's a great show because of two factors. First off, it's all true stories. Jack confirms the facts for his show, just like I make sure the stories here on this podcast are true. And you know, I do love some crazy true stories. And second, for me anyway, it deals with some subject matter that interests me. Computers, the internet, technology, hacking, all that stuff. A recent episode was about a guy who put credit card skimmers on gas pumps and how that scam usually works. But even more scary, now there are credit card skimmers on e-commerce websites, and there's really no way for you to know it.
Darknet Diaries is over 50 episodes dealing with all kinds of cool stuff like that, which you won't find on other shows. Jack started this podcast as just a one-man show, doing all the work himself. I can tell you from firsthand experience, it's a lot of work. In the beginning, it's difficult because you really don't have an audience. You just have to keep at it, keep promoting, and keep putting out good quality content, and eventually the masses will find the show. That's what's happened to Jack and Darknet Diaries, and I see a lot of similarities with my podcast, What Was That Like? It just keeps growing as more and more people discover it. Now Jack has a team of people, and he's able to do the podcast full time. And Darknet Diaries has a Patreon account, and I support that show every month because I really like the content, and I think it's worth paying for to make sure it keeps going. So I would encourage you to check it out. You can get it on any podcast player or at darknetdiaries.com. And if you like this show, I invite you to become a supporter at whatwasthatlike.com/support. I really appreciate it, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.